The Tea Health Show, your medical lifestyle podcast, brought to you by The Tea Clinic.
Good morning, I'm Dr. Mark. This is The Tea Health Show. In last week's episode, we spoke about breast cancer. October is Worldwide Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And today I've asked a plastic and reconstructive surgeon, Dr. Vivian Jandera, to come and talk to us about what can happen from a surgical perspective once you either get the diagnosis of breast cancer or you've had breast cancer and had some surgery done. With me in studio is also our co-host, Sister Elise van Aart. Vivian, thank you for taking time out of your incredibly busy schedule to come and talk to us about this. I know for you, breasts, especially breast reduction, is one of your passions, and breast reconstruction is something that is emotional for so many women when they have cancer. Do you want to just touch a little bit on that and how it affects their psyche?
Sure, Mark. Thank you very much for having me. It's like an honor to be here as Breast Awareness, Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And there's so much that can be done after one's had the diagnosis. It's really not like sitting on death row. And you don't always, you know, don't have to end up with completely deformed look. Breasts are such a part of women's femininity. And if I look through my practice, through all the conditions I see, everybody wants to look feminine. Even an 80-year-old still wants to have two breasts and look as nice as they possibly can. A reconstructed breast will never look completely the same as before the cancer, but there's so much that can be done. There's so many new techniques. And if you use a holistic approach and a team approach, it is possible to give people quite a positive outcome.
So, Viv, let's start. You have breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And according to the stage of a breast cancer and how far it's spread and where it's sitting, we decide what surgery to do. Now, here it can mean a complete mastectomy or just a partial lumpectomy. Do you want to explain a little bit what the differences are between them?
Well, I think that once the diagnosis has been made, you then get assigned preferably to a whole kind of team approach where your oncologist probably runs the story. If you need to have a surgical removal, which you would have a general surgeon and then hopefully a plastic surgeon at the same time. In between, everybody and the radiologist come together and work out a treatment plan for the patient. Sometimes patients have chemotherapy before they have surgery to shrink down and downgrade the tumor. And then it goes for the kind of surgery. So there's surgical techniques where only the lump is removed. And in South Africa, the general surgeon normally does the cancer resection and the plastic surgeon does the reconstruction. But we tend to work together and we're often at the procedure together.
Okay.
And you can do the reconstruction, what we call immediate, which would be at the same time as the cancer surgery, which could be removal of a lump, removal of a quarter of a breast, or removal of a whole breast, and in some cases, removal of both breasts. There's so many different surgical techniques at the moment and so many reasons for choosing those techniques. There's even the option, I'm sure you've all heard about Angelina Jolie, where you do a preventative mastectomy and you can even these days, depending where the tumor is and what the biopsies show, have a skin-sparing mastectomy and in some cases even keep your original nipple areola complex. So it's such a wide variety of things that can happen, which is why it's very important to have an assessment and a complete treatment plan. Studies have kind of shown that if you can do an immediate reconstruction, it's psychologically really good. But immediate reconstructions in certain cases are really technically tricky and have a large range of complications. So sometimes your surgeons may suggest that you wait and have a delayed reconstruction.
My immediate thought goes, if you remove a cancer, that lump or the cancerous growth, and you need radiation or further chemo, does that affect the decision to reconstruct at that time, or does that depend on your radiation oncologist and the oncologist?
I think it's a combined decision. So they might, it having radiotherapy and chemotherapy per se doesn't stop you from having a reconstruction always, but there may be other medical reasons why it's deemed, it's a scale. So it's a scale of balance. You balance the complications versus the outcomes. They are much more immediate reconstruction is much more popular than it ever used to be. But I just want to put it out there that sometimes it's just not possible. And delayed reconstructions also can have a lovely result. They're often technically a little bit easier because the tissues have settled down and you can get a really quite nice result.
So for me, if you have a lumpectomy, so we only remove a part of a breast tissue, Do you do reconstructive surgery there by what? Putting tissue from somewhere else in the body there? Or is it a small little implant? It's not like a whole boob job kind of thing, is it? Because
No. If you do a lumpectomy, we what they call oncoplastic surgery. So in other words, the oncology plus the plastics all together. So the surgeon will decide how much of the breast needs to be removed and which area needs to be removed. And having done that, the plastic surgeon will go and they'll select the technique that will give the patient the most optimal result.
So that's the plastic surgeon, not the general surgeon.
The general surgeon, you'll both be there.
Okay.
But the plastic surgeon will be allowed to decide or have an input in how we do the surgery. So, for instance, somebody's got very, very big breasts and needs a small lumpectomy. It's sometimes possible to resect that part of the tumor that needs to be resected by means of a breast reduction. And then you end up afterwards looking as though you've just had a breast reduction. And then naturally you might need to have, we always have to talk about, you might have what we call an equalizing procedure on the other side. So now if you've had very big breasts and you have that nice reduction, which maybe your breasts even look better than before you were diagnosed with cancer, then you would have to have a reduction on the other side.
And that's done simultaneously?
And that's done simultaneously.
Okay,
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Right.
So for me, one of the big questions is, if we have to have a full mastectomy,
yes,
reconstruction becomes difficult because if the skin is involved, do you remove the skin of the breast as well?
Yes, you.
And how do you create new breast skin? Is it like a flap in other surgical procedures, or is there a different way? If you can't save the skin, if the skin is involved.
Well, you very seldom in a full mastectomy save the skin. So you end up having a horizontal or a slanted scar going across your chest and a flat chest. Okay. So what are we missing? We're missing skin and we're missing the tissue that used to be the breast tissue. Right.
And that's fatty as well as glandular
Fatty as well as glandular. So I'd like to divide reconstruction in, I can reconstruct with my own tissue, or I can reconstruct with not my own tissue. Okay. So let's start with the older version, which is still you can get really beautiful results in the right patient. And what you then do is you use an implant to do the reconstruction. But as you mentioned, Mark, there isn't enough skin.
Yeah.
So what we do is if somebody's got very small breasts and they haven't taken a lot of skin, you can go what we call a direct implant reconstruction. So at the time of the mastectomy, they put in the implant and then we do a nipple areola reconstruction at a later stage. Okay, so that.
Okay, so you literally just close the breast tissue
over an implant.
Now, I remember in one of our previous podcasts, you spoke about the T anchor.
Yes.
So is that the same kind of?
No. A mastectomy normally has a horizontal scar or a curved straight scar.
It will literally just be like
you have to close the skin over it.
Or like that.
Or sliding, slanted, depending.
Okay, like
depending where the tumor is.
Okay.
And that's where the little bit of art comes into it.
Yeah, but for me, it just to get the skin together. That's probably your biggest complication also.
Yes. So usually there isn't enough skin. And then we put in, at the time of the mastectomy, we put in an implant called a tissue expander. So a tissue expander looks like an implant. It's the shape of an implant. It's got the silicone rubber on the outside, and it's got a port where you can fill it up, but it's empty, okay? So you need much less skin to cover a squished bag. It's actually like a squish Jiffy bag. Okay.
Okay.
So you pop that in under the skin. You allow the skin to heal. And then you see the patient in your rooms weekly. And there's lovely magnetic devices where you can locate the port. And then with a little needle, you fill up that implant slowly, slowly with saline. And that will stretch your skin. And you it's quite nice for the patient because you can keep growing that implant until the patient says, oops, yes, that's a nice size. I like that. Then you normally inflate it just a little bit more to give you a little bit of leeway. That's your first stage, okay? And then you take that implant out, you take that tissue expander out, and you put in your final implant. Now, you've actually, by stretching, grown new skin, so you've got enough skin to cover that implant.
How long does that process take?
You know, I always say if I've got a patient that I've got that's doing tissue expander, implant, and then nipple areola reconstruction, it's like, I always say to them, it's a year until we finished, you know? But one thing about this method is each stage is quite a small stage. Mm. So the biggest stage is actually the removal of the tumor and putting in the implant, putting in the tissue expander. Taking out the tissue expander and doing the equalization procedure is not such a big stage. And doing the nipple areola reconstruction is also. So one of the advantages of doing it that way is that you can almost carry on with your life because you're in hospital for a night or two. Your recovery after each surgical procedure is quite quick, and so that's one way of going about it. However, not everyone is suitable for that. It's not a great idea to do a tissue expander implant reconstruction only in someone who's having a lot of radiotherapy. There are risks associated with that, although there are authors who actually do that and get very nice results. But then we move on to our other concept, which is using your own tissue. And then we have a concept of doing a little bit of both. So using your own tissue, you would take what we call a flap, which is an area of skin with its own blood supply, an area of tissue with its own blood supply, and transfer it into the area to make a breast shape.
So classic, where do you usually take it get from? That flap okay. from?
Okay,
from?
So in the old days or in before the advent of microsurgery,
yeah.
we used to use the latissimus muscle, which is a muscle around dorsus. On your back.
Okay.
And you would be able to take skin and an underlying muscle, and then you swing it under the arm and bring it and form a breast, okay? Another common way that was done in the past was to do like a limited tummy tuck and use your rectus muscle with an area of skin, okay? We call that a tram flap, and then turn that around and form the breast tissue. I think now the modern way that there's amazing microsurgical techniques, because one of the problems of doing a tram flap or doing a latissimus flap is the donor site. So you don't want to like create a breast but create an ugly donor site.
Okay.
So now we're able to do microsurgery where we take a deep, like a tummy tuck flap, but being less destructive about it and taking exactly the amount of tissue you need with its own little artery and vein attached. And then you take it to the breast area and we sew the arteries to the artery into that area and the veins into that area.
So it's not a flap, it's actually like a transplant.
It's called
almost.
A free flap. So when you
free flap is when you remove it.
You literally remove it and you connect the blood vessels from the flap to the blood vessels in the area that we're going to put it into. And some of those results are absolutely spectacular. And there are surgeons that specialize in this and sort of do this day in and day out. And if I ever get breast cancer, I'll be going to one of them. The techniques have advanced so much, Mark. And also like doing a nipple areola reconstruction. The nipple reconstruction is relatively easy. But there's ways of doing 3D tattooing these days. It's an absolute art form that they tattoo. But if you look at the patient from far, it honestly looks like it's three-dimensional.
So literally without doing a reconstruction, the tattooing will create the illusion of a nipple.
Absolutely. But what an illusion.
Until you actually go and touch it.
My question is, where do they take this donor site for a nipple reconstruction?
Okay, it's quite interesting. So I always think God looked after us because if you take skin from your inner thigh, from your groin area, which is pale, and you make it very thin, so it has to grow back on into the area where the areola is, okay? So we call that a full thickness graft. So it's a graft. It doesn't have blood vessels that's supplying it like a flap.
Like we would do a skin graft.
Yeah, so it's like a thick skin graft.
Okay.
And funny enough, it colors to the color of an areola. Just by itself, without doing anything. Sometimes it's a little bit pale, and what's very nice is once it's all settled down, there's always these little nuances that you can do. You can actually tattoo around it, so it really blends in, and it really looks as though it's actually your own tissue.
And then the nipple itself?
Nipple itself, we usually make little – so if you think you've got your mastectomy scar, and now you've got – however you've chosen to create that new breast. So you've either got an implant covered by skin. Sometimes we use a small implant and cover it with a flap. Okay? And sometimes you can even do a reconstruction just by injecting fat, by doing a series of – I didn't mention that – by doing a series of fat transplants. So now you've got your breast – what we call your breast mound or your breast shape. It's got skin over it. And there's cute little flaps that we do that actually raise up and make a nipple. So to make a nipple is relatively simple. And then you decide what you're going to do with your areola. And I obviously grew up learning how to do those grafts. But I just think the way they tattoo these days, I'm sending my patients for this 3D tattooing.
Okay. What is the...
Can I ask before... Do they sometimes do an under-muscle implant as well,
There's surgeons that do just under skin and then reposition the remaining breast tissue over the implant. And then there are patients who are going to use the muscle of your chest, which is the pectoralis muscle, and pop the prosthesis under the muscle.
Okay.
It's all a question of how thin that skin is and what kind of effect you're trying to achieve. And also, it's obviously logically simpler to reconstruct someone with small breasts than to match someone who's got very big breasts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Viv, these procedures, I know that you are in private practice.
Mm-hmm.
Are they done in our government and state institutions, or do they only do mastectomies? Or can you not answer that question? I know that you used to be in government as a head of a department.
Look, so. I was very involved in breast reconstruction. I think, logically speaking, there are far more mastectomies than we are able to do breast reconstructions. But remember, the government hospitals, the tertiary institutions, are training centers. And okay. They've got to learn. So breast reconstructions are something we do quite a lot of. I think it's impossible when you've got a waiting list of 80 or 100 mastectomies, which is what it was at the place that I left when I stopped working there. It's not possible. There isn't the theater time to reconstruct all of them, but we definitely do select patients because it's a teaching hospital and we do breast reconstruction.
And then I want to know, is it always the patient's choice if they want to reconstruct
yes,
or not?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. So there's a movement in America where people walk around with their mastectomy scars and run marathons topless and say, this is who I am and why do I have to, sort of adhere to what's acceptable and why isn't it – I had an illness, I had a disease, so why is it not acceptable to have a mastectomy scar? And they're almost proud of their mastectomy scar because – they've had this illness and they've got through it. So the choice whether you want a reconstruction must be that of the patient. What I feel very strongly about is that it must be discussed with the patient. And it's only in the last 20 years that reconstructions has become sort of routine or an expected part of breast cancer management. In the old days when you had those old general surgeons, okay, you were just supposed to be dearly happy that they saved your life. And you weren't supposed to worry what it looked like. My own mother had breast cancer and had they used to do a radical mastectomy in those days. Sister Elise, I'm sure you remember that.
I do remember.
So they took away the breast, but they took away the muscle underneath. So instead of having a flat chest, you actually had a dent in your chest. And I remember studying for my final exams and my mom looking over my shoulder and said, sure, she wished that this had been possible in her day. And she was way into her 60s. And I said, well, if you could do it now, would you do it? So she said, are you mad? My mom was a very down-to-earth kind of person. So it's now, I think, as much as the surgery or the oncology or everything that goes with it, I think plastic surgery is as much an option and should be discussed with every patient.
So Viv, question, how long after a mastectomy? So I've had my mastectomy, I've gone through all my treatments, I've opted at that point in time not to have a reconstruction. or I wasn't offered a reconstruction, or I couldn't afford a reconstruction. Is there a limiting time span that say, okay, you know what, sorry, it's going to be too difficult after 5 or 6 or 7 years, or can you start that process of expanding the tissue like you would do right from the start? Is that still then possible for women?
Yeah, sure. There's no time limit at which you shouldn't have a reconstruction. I had a patient who had a mastectomy done 13 years before she came to see me, but she just had the worst experience. Everybody was mean to her. She had the worst anesthetic. She felt awful afterwards. And after that experience, she said, there's no way, Jose, that I'm ever having any more surgery. And then slowly, slowly, as the years passed, she was actually really an attractive, thin woman. And then she came to see me and she said, is it too late? So I said, absolutely not. And in those days, we had a thing called a Becker implant. So you put the implant in, and it was quite a few years ago, and it had like a little tube and a port. So you would fill it up. It was an anatomical shape implant, and then you would just remove the port, and that became the final implant. And we did that for her, and she was thrilled. So there's no real limit to when you can decide to have a reconstruction.
I want to ask about men, males, when they have mastectomies for it is a thing that sometimes they do can develop breast cancer.
Breast cancer, and far more than we want to know about.
Yeah.
So is there reconstructive surgery for them as well?
I think it is possible. They would probably lose their nipple areola complex and would have to have that reconstructed.
Okay.
I think
Is that going to be the same procedure? You can go for that 3D tattooing?
I think you could go for the 3D tattooing. Just remember that male breasts are different from female breasts. So the nipple is in a different place. It's smaller. It's higher up and more to the side. So there's a bit of a trick to it. I think there are pectoral implants that you can use, but I think there's usually enough soft tissue that if we just do a nipple areola reconstruction, it's probably enough.
Yeah.
But yes, there are implants that are possible. And obviously with regenerative medicine, if this guy's just got a little bit of a depression, very nice to do a series of fat grafting in that area, because that's your own tissue. And I'd probably go the fat grafting route in a man with a nipple areola reconstruction.
While we're on the guys, our very, very first podcast that you and I did together was around gynecomastia.
Yes.
So treatment for gynecomastia, you have either the surgical option or the liposuction option.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say whether there's an association with gynecomastia and a higher incidence of breast cancer, or
No. It's a genetic type thing. I think 1% of breast cancers are male, and I think males don't expect to get breast cancer. They tend to be diagnosed a little bit late because they just don't realize that that's really a problem, and they don't even realize that they can get that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've never treated a man with breast cancer for a recon, I must say, but yes, it happens.
Viv, then, one of the questions that I want to ask is, can you speak about contraindications to reconstruction?
I think contraindications have got a lot to do with, I think people think that it's about the stage of your cancer. So the stage of your cancer is relative. But if you have a cancer that doesn't have a great survival rate, my logic goes, if you don't have any other comorbidities, why can't you look nice for those few extra years? Why do you have to? So I don't believe like a stage 3 cancer, for instance, is a contraindication to breast reconstruction. Everybody has a right to look normal, I believe. However, what would be a downside and might weigh you, you know, you'd have to balance those things, but things like being very overweight, smoking would be a big thing because it affects the tissues and the flaps. So it's the patient's general health. If they had lung disease and they weren't fit for anesthesia, for prolonged anesthesia, and that would also make you decide to perhaps choose a couple of shorter operations rather than a longer one. So I would say the biggest contributing factor to deciding whether you could or couldn't have a reconstruction would be your general health rather than the stage of the cancer.
One of the other questions that I think we need to answer is regarding complications of surgery.
Yes.
Not the medical complications, but the complications of the surgery by themselves. And the one that I think of is lymphedema in the arm.
Yes.
If that cancer has spread and, you know, what we have to go and remove some of those lymph glands. Is it something that's common for those patients? And can you speak a little bit about what we can do in those cases should it occur?
It's a very difficult condition to treat. It seems to me as though it occurs less commonly than it did like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But it's really debilitating.
Don't you think, sorry, Dr. Cantera, don't you think it's because it's less invasive surgery now?
I think so. I think you're right.
Because years ago, we always had to go and remove the glands.
And we removed
well.
All of the glands. Yeah. We didn't just test the first one and see how things went.
So that's when we do the satellite gland.
The sentinel node. So it's the first node. They can map where the first node is, that if it would spread, it would spread to that node. And if your sentinel node is like negative, then you don't need to do a node. So we're removing less nodes than we used to in the past. Mm. In terms of treating patients with lymphedema, sure, it's a very difficult thing. We look at non-surgical, we look at medical treatments like compression bandaging, like lymphatic drainage. And then we can go all the way across to really complex things. There are some surgeons in Asia, and some of our surgeons have gone to learn this, where they do lymphatic to lymphatic
bypasses
and anastomosis to increase the lymphatic drainage. Often a lot of the research has been done on lymphedema in the lower limb, but I'm sure at some point there's going to be an advance that would allow it to be used in the upper limb as well.
Okay, so that's one of my complications I've seen a lot of them. Mm-hmm.
Can I just ask, should you start sooner rather than later with that treatment, lymphedema treatment? Do they need to wear their compression arm sleeves immediately after surgery, or how does it work?
I think as soon as you see that it's starting, you should probably jump on it and try to treat it conservatively. Yeah. It's just a horrible problem. It really, really is. Yeah.
For the patients who have the reconstruction and then have to go for radiotherapy or radiation therapy, which we know can create problems with healing of skin.
Mm-hmm.
Would you consider them for reconstruction at that point in time? I think you've answered it partly. Or would you say, if we know that, you know what, this is a cancer or a stage of a cancer where radiation is going to be most probably part of a treatment, for instance, if they have to radiate the chest wall or something like that, would you recommend for those patients from a surgical perspective maybe to delay and let the skin heal before you start expanding?
Not really, Mark. So what we do, if we know the patient's going to get radiation, we tend to stay away from using non-yourself tissue, not your own tissue.
So you won't use an implant, you will use...
It's such a complicated question, because like the puristic training would be you'd stay away and you would use flaps and you would use your own tissue. But there's a surgeon in New York called Dr. Cadero who's published a huge series of patients who he's done with expander implants. So you might choose to expand the patient, leave the expander in, have your radiotherapy, and only put your implant in after the radiotherapy is finished. So the incidence of what we call capsular contracture, which means the breast implant going hard, is much higher in breast reconstruction patients than in patients who just choose to have an augmentation. But there are surgeons who found ways about going around this, and one of the things is to actually put in the implant at a slightly later stage. But remember that your skin is still nice and soft after you've had the mastectomy. So that's the nicest time to try to expand the skin. So you would almost like keep the skin, and even if you formed a capsule around your expander, you could remove the capsule and put an implant in. However, you also have a slightly higher risk of getting a hard capsular contracture after having had radiotherapy. Mm-hmm. Radiotherapy causes damage to the tiny arteries that are near the skin. So they're arteries that don't branch with anything else. We call them end arteries, okay? Mm. And this tends to be a problem that continues. So we always say radio in plastic surgery, because we want beautiful skin flaps and we want skin viability, we say radiotherapy is the gift that keeps on giving. So every so often you have areas of hardness, you have areas where the patient has a little bit of death of fat in the breasts. But there are a lot of things we can do these days. I've had patients who've had breast reconstruction, they've had radiotherapy, and then they have a little bit of area of like fat death, fat necrosis. And if you go and you do flat transplantation into that area, you bring new blood supply into the area and that pain goes away. So I've treated a couple of patients like that. So there's a lot more solutions to the little problems than there were before. Breast reconstruction still remains a major surgical procedure, you know, but definitely I think worth it if somebody wants it.
So patients who have had breast augmentations.
Yes.
With implants, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. How often do they screen? And what is the best way of screening for breast cancer? We know that gold standard is still mammogram, but so many patients that presents to me in my office say they hate going for their mammograms because it's really, really uncomfortable once they have an implant in. Now, you can also put the implant under the muscle or over the muscle. Mm-hmm. And for screening for breast cancer, does that make a difference?
Absolutely not, Mark. And the screening for someone who's had a breast augmentation is exactly the same as a screening for a normal person. You know, this mammography hurts business. It's like a little bit of an urban legend. One woman tells another woman, yo, I had a mastectomy, a mammogram. It was absolute agony. But for those of you that haven't had a mammogram in the past, okay, it's more difficult to do a mammogram on a smaller breast than on a bigger breast. And the way with the new mammography machines and the new techniques, it's absolutely perfectly possible to do a mammogram on a patient with an implant, okay? So you end up resting your breast on this. You know, everyone says, yes, they squeeze and it's agony. But you rest your breast on a plate, okay? And then they set the machine, kind of calibrate it, and then that machine is just above the top of your breast.
So it's no longer squishy flat.
No, you do squish, but you squish for literally 3 seconds, okay? So what they say, okay, hold on, breathe in, breathe out, whatever. 1, 2, 3, and it's done. And then they'll reposition your breast for another view. 1, 2, 3 seconds, and it's done. And it's not mortal agony. It's high-grade discomfort. And compared to what you could get out of a mammogram, I think there's a lot said about mammography that's not really true. I don't think it's as bad as people like to talk about how bad it is.
Okay.
So go for your mammograms.
The other thing is, and I know that you're not an oncologist. I'm going to try. I don't know whether you know the answer because I don't. Is there a change in risk for breast cancer if you've had augmentation done?
Not at all. Your risk remains the same as the general population. So breast augmentation, if you are liable to get breast cancer and genetically or it's your bad luck, you'll have it with or without an augment. Otherwise, Mark, we wouldn't be doing augmentations if they were associated with an increased risk of breast cancer.
Same for reduction, eh?
Yes. Quite strangely, patients with reductions and augmentations tend to have their cancers picked up earlier because they tend to be more in tune with what's happening with their breasts. So that's also quite interesting. And, I mean, say you've had a breast reduction and you've got that anchor T scar.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's possible to do the lumpectomy using those same scars.
So
that's actually quite nice. And I mean, if you are doing a breast reconstruction of someone that has an augment, you can either leave the augment in and the capsule can form around the old augment and you can t- take it out, or you've got a space and you pop the tissue expander in there. So it like doesn't affect it either way. So it's not like, oh my goodness, I mustn't have an augmentation or I mustn't have a reduction because one day if I get cancer, I often get asked this, are there like radiation and chemotherapy that I won't be able to have because I chose to have the previous breast surgery? Absolutely not.
Okay. So, Elise, do you have any other questions?
No, I just enjoyed this discussion this morning a lot.
The one thing that I think women worry about, so they've had the reconstruction done or they had the mastectomy and they're sitting with the scars, and sometimes the scars aren't great. What can we do to improve the scars right after surgery and then it making them look better if you decide not to do anything instead of having an unsightly scar? I don't want to call it a horrible scar, unsightly scar. Are there treatments that we can do for those scars?
Absolutely, Mark. But I do want to say that the way general surgeons do mastectomies nowadays compared to like 30 years ago is completely different. We've gone away from the general surgeons thinking, I'm saving your life, it doesn't matter what you look like, to really making aesthetic-looking scars. In the past, I've seen older patients who had their mastectomies 30 years ago. They honestly look like they've been bitten by a shark, okay? But nowadays, it's not unusual for a really good general surgeon to really leave a very fine scar. We can treat the scar. There are many things we can do. There are scar creams that improve the scar in the immediate post-operative period. Taping is important. One can do laser. One can do microneedling to that area, which will improve the scar. So there are a lot of non-surgical alternatives to actually improve that scar. The funny thing is that a lot of the patients they've been through being diagnosed with breast cancer, they've had some sort of surgical procedure and they've had a reconstruction and they go, ach, asseblief, I don't want to see any more doctors for the next 2 years. I've even had patients who don't want a nipple areola reconstruction because they say, I'm fine, I look okay, I'm happy. And I go, no, you haven't got a breast yet. Please, let's just do your nipple areola. And some patients just say, no, I'm done, I've had enough. The emotional toll of going through this process of being diagnosed with breast cancer and living through the treatment, the radiotherapy, the chemotherapy, I think we forget about what a toll it takes on a human being. So some people at one point just say, enough.
Would you, after what you've just said, advise patients with a diagnosis of breast cancer to consult with their oncology surgical reconstructive team, as well as a health coach or a mental health practitioner on this journey? Because I think from what I see in my practice, patients who do get that diagnosis are overwhelmed and they need psychological support, which they don't necessarily get from a surgical and oncology team. Would you recommend this journey to be with a psychologist or a mental health practitioner?
I wish all patients could have access to this. What has helped a little bit is also 30 years ago, you would have a breast cancer diagnosed on mammogram. This is in my mum's day, okay? And then the general surgeon would say, we'll have a look when we're in theater, and when you wake up, you might have your breast removed. Flip, I want to know if my breast is going to be on or off when I come out of theater. And the poor woman just said yes. So now, that's changed. And also it was like, I've heard surgeons say when I was students, if you were my wife, I'd have you on the list next week. Rubbish. There's absolutely no reason to panic. You've got a couple of weeks. You can sit down. You can consult a psychologist. You need to speak to your oncologist. You need to speak to your surgeon. You need to be shown what your reconstructive options are. You need to just calm down a little bit and make a slightly rational decision. And I wish all patients had the opportunity to be treated by a psychologist or by someone helping on the mental health aspect, whether it's someone from a church or from, you know, wherever the counseling comes from with whatever resonates with that patient. I wish there was that available to every single patient with breast cancer. The emotional toil of having this diagnosis can't be underestimated. And the other thing is, after they've had their reconstruction, after they've had and everything settled down, the scar looks lovely, shanana, kumbaya, we're all happy. Every time that patient gets a headache, they wonder if they've got meds.
Mm.
Every time that patient gets back pain, they wonder, is it going? I read an amazing book,
Bone
Spread. Because we know that breast cancer is a systemic disease. So one of the things that's very important to try to understand, very much like melanoma, breast cancer is not the lump. It's a systemic disease, and one of the things it does is manifest as a lump. So that's where that whole thing about if I take the whole breast and I take the muscle, then it won't come back. But we don't do that anymore because that's not necessarily true. So that little thing is in the back of their minds forever.
I did not know this.
Neither did I.
So I did not know this. That it's a systemic disease.
I really thought it's just the lump.
So,
no, it's not.
You know, at the moment that you say that, this conversation can go in a completely different direction. Last week, I spoke with Dr. Owen Nosworthy, oncologist. And one of the things that came out of this was obesity is the biggest driver of inflammation and cancer, especially breast cancer and prostate cancer. We see the incidence in younger women or in the population of all cancers explode. It's getting exponentially bigger. I think the statistics on colorectal cancer was a 50% increase in the past 10 years. Under the age of 50, where we never saw it prior to that. So as a systemic disease, I think this speaks so much more to lifestyle. Living healthy, getting enough sleep, managing stress, getting enough exercise, and above all, managing your weight.
You're dead right, but having said that, I also have to say, I have patients who I treated for breast reconstructions. And obviously you get to know your patients quite well because you see them quite often. And they go, I can't understand why this happened to me. I'm thin, I exercise, I'm vegetarian, I do all the right things. It's not fair. What, you know, because there's this whole sense of injustice, like why me? Like I've done everything. So there are people who do everything right and still get breast cancer.
I want to give out a statistic, and I did it last week because we get this question in our practice 10 times a day. And it's, is hormone replacement therapy safe? Now, the Women's Health Initiative study, which was the biggest study on safety of hormone replacement in women, found the following. If you take 10,000 women who's never had any kind of hormonal treatment, 26 of those women will develop breast cancer. And this is the important thing. Women develop breast cancer irrespective of hormones. And then when you take 10,000 women on hormone replacement therapy, 35 of them will develop breast cancer. So that's nine patients in 10,000. So that gives you less than one patient in 1,000. Is my math correct? Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that gives you 0.1% chance or change in risk. What we also need to understand is that types of hormone replacement therapy actually can help prevent other types of cancers. And here we're specifically thinking of progesterone, which is hugely important for your immune system. Doing this safely and understanding the risks is where we need to create more education. We're running out of time. You have another appointment. Screening at home. As a surgeon, breast self-examination. How important is that? And how do we teach this to patients? Or do they miss this? Can you actually examine your breasts yourself and do it correct and identify lump? Or should you rely on your doctor or mammogram?
That's such an interesting question, Mark. Like, breast self-examination is like a dogma of general practice. It's something that we all get told to do. If you do breast self-examination monthly like you're supposed to and you find a lump, please go to your doctor immediately. However, the aim of breast cancer treatment and diagnosis, and this is from working in a multi-specialist clinic in a government hospital, is to actually identify it before it's a lump. So if you find a lump that's the size of a grain of rice, it's been there for 2 years. So how old?
And how the hell are you going to
feel a grain of rice? Feel a grain of rice. So that's why screening, I believe, is a valuable tool in picking, because if you pick up your breast cancer early, it's a breeze. You know?
So
I think that the routine sonar and mammography is very important. And you talked about having mammograms, Mark, but actually if you have a clinical examination accompanied by a mammogram and a sonar, you've got an exponential effect in your – it's not just do the mammogram. It's examine the patient, take a history, and a sonar combined with a mammogram gives you far more information than either of them alone. We tend to do sonars in younger patients because the breast tissue is very dense and you don't see a lot on mammography. But in a postmenopausal woman, the combination of mammography and sonar is amazing. Can I just take 2 minutes to tell you about my very brilliant friend, Dr. Catherine Mulherber? She's a radiologist who's very involved in artificial intelligence. And she's developed this AI program on ultrasound, where she has an ultrasound probe linked to an iPad. And she's distributed out to rural health clinics. And they, you know, nobody in the rural areas can get to have a mammogram, whatever. So what they do is they sonar the breast, and the AI programmer will pick up if there's something to worry about, and then they can go forward and
go to a
tertiary hospital. So she actually was taken by the government to the G20 Congress and won an award for this innovation.
That's interesting.
So that's actually really amazing. So you must have her on the program to talk about AI in medicine.
I will do that. That will be one of our...
She's also busy now with a thing, Cecilia, you'll love that. She's busy with a program. I saw her yesterday, actually. She's busy with a program with an AI thing where you take a photograph of a wound and it'll be able to tell you how much necrosis is there, how it's looking, and then also if it's progressing like it's supposed to progress and when it should seek further treatment. So imagine if you can put all these things into the rural areas, how much we could improve the health of South Africa, you know, the health of ordinary South Africans. And it's and it's cheap, and it's she's got an AI company and, you know, computer people, peeps that work for her. Look, that's way above my level of understanding.
No, but I think we are going to take some time to get to that stage.
Yes, I know, but wow, isn't that amazing that you can actually screen someone in a rural area and then send them on, you know, instead of telling people they must have a mammogram every 2 years and you live like 120 kilometers from everywhere with only a taxi and a bus. I mean, it's nobody's going to do it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, with the disparity in accessibility to proper healthcare is really, really a driving factor behind the elevation and incidence of preventable or diagnosable diseases and treatable diseases.
And with breast cancer, the earlier you diagnose it, the better your prognosis, bottom line.
Viv, thank you for, again, coming all the way from Pretoria.
It's a pleasure.
Here to come and talk to us about this. If patients want to get hold of you or ask questions, can we give him your practice number?
I think the easiest thing is to email me direct, because so if somebody has any questions, I'm very happy to help. The email address would be info@ and then drjandera.co.za.
Okay.
It's much easier to answer an email. The phones ring like mad in our practice anyway. I'm not sure you'd get – I think you get more individual attention if you – email us a question.
Okay.
Thank you.
So if you want any information or you want to contact Vivian, Dr. Jandera, the email to send is info@drjandera.co.za. You can also get hold of us on the T Clinic at 010-824-1393, and we can put you in contact with her. Until next time, we wish you all the best in health.
That was the T Health Show, empowering you with knowledge. Download all previous episodes on your favorite podcast platform. The T Health Show is brought to you by T Clinic.